Glad to have you on board tonight. We're learning a lot. We always do. We're presenting a lot of material for your consideration. That's what journalism is supposed to be. We get to spend each night with Dr. Henry Nyman, PhD, one of the world's preeminent virologists. He's worked with SARS back 17 years ago with the Chinese. He is a man of extraordinary scientific acumen and brilliance, and we're just grateful to have him. It's Monday. Henry, what I'd like to do is say hello to you, bring you on, then I'm going to play a little bit of a video here because it's important. I want people to understand something.
It's going to be hard to see.
Well, I'm going to play the sound anyway.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay,
I got the joke.
Kidding.
That was good.
Okay.
I like it.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. We need humor. All right. What happened today? The CDC is talking about arrests of Chinese who are over here working in our most sensitive fields of biology, nanotechnology, computer science, you name it. Many of them are People's Liberation Army spies. I understand that. Now, this is a news conference held, I believe, today about the arrests of a number of Chinese. And I want you to pay close attention to this. This is very important. They've been allowed over here, invited over here. Harvard University is specifically mentioned as one of the key players that the Chinese use to get their people in our most sensitive programming over here in terms of college and university research. So just take a listen to this. I just want you to understand that this country has been looted for a long time in terms of its technology. It's not to say we don't have spies, too. But this is wholesale stuff, so take a listen.
We're here today to announce three separate cases highlighting the ongoing threat posed by Chinese economic espionage and research theft in the United States. First, the arrest today of a Harvard University professor for lying about his participation in a Chinese foreign recruitment program. Second, this morning we have unsealed a separate indictment of a Chinese national working as a scientific researcher at Boston University who failed to mention on her visa application that she is also a lieutenant with the People's Liberation Army. Finally, this office has indicted another Chinese national for trying to smuggle vials of biological material out of the United States to China and lying about it to federal investigators. That defendant, whose entry to the United States had been sponsored by Harvard University, was a cancer researcher at a lab at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. So, this morning, the FBI arrested Dr. Charles Lieber, the chair of the Department of Chemistry and Chemical Biology at Harvard University, for making false statements regarding his involvement in China's Thousand Talents Plan and his affiliation with the Wuhan University of Technology. The complaint alleges that Dr. Lieber signed a contract with the Chinese university in Wuhan and was paid up to $50,000 per month, plus up to $158,000 in living expenses, and awarded more than $1.5 million to set up a research lab at the Chinese school and work there on researching nanotechnology. Lieber also joined China's Thousand Talents Plan, according to the complaint, a Chinese government-run program designed to entice scientists and researchers in the United States to share their research expertise with China. At the same time, Dr. Lieber was receiving U.S. grant funds from the Department of Defense and the National Institutes of Health. National Institutes of Health spends up to $39 million a year funding medical research in the United States. Those programs required Dr. Lieber to disclose if he was working with, including receiving funding from, any foreign power. When questioned, Lieber hid his involvement with the Chinese entities, including specifically disavowing any connection to China's Thousand Talents plan. Meanwhile, based on the complaint, it appears that China paid Lieber hundreds of thousands of dollars over the years for his involvement with the Chinese entities and for his work on research for Chinese gain. Also today, a federal grand jury indicted Yen Qing Ye, a Chinese national, with lying on her J-1 visa application, making false statements to Customs and Border Protection, conspiracy, and being an unregistered agent of the People's Republic of China. According to court documents, Ye is a lieutenant in the People's Liberation Army, but she concealed her military connections while employed as a researcher at Boston University's Department of Physics, Chemistry, and Biomedical Engineering Center for Polymer Studies.
Okay, there's more to it. I do have the story up there. It's at the top of headlines. I think all of you should be aware of that. These are very sensitive areas of bio research, nanotech research. It's been a laugh to the Chinese for a long time about how easy it is to get into this country and loot it in terms of research. The former director of the Fort Detrick Laboratory once said, in fact, he said this when he quit. He resigned. He said, I can go into the lab on any given day and go to the most secret, secure facilities in Fort Detrick. And on any given day, there will be more foreign nationals in there than Americans working. And he was so disgusted and enraged that that led to his resignation. All right, that's a political issue. I'm not trying to say that there's a bioweapon issue here, that they were responsible for it. I'm just telling you that we have real problems in this country. And right now, the biggest problem we have is called coronavirus. And that's what Henry is here to talk about again tonight. All right, my friend, let's launch into it.
Okay, well, on the science front, there was quite a bit of activity. What I've been doing lately is doing updates, kind of putting the most recent data on the various states using their websites and how many new cases they have. And the numbers are quite striking, and they pretty much point out why those who have looked at this are very concerned about the virus and how much virus there is reported and how much virus there's probably not reported, and how close we are to becoming the next Italy, or actually how close we are to surpassing Italy. And Italy has captured a lot of attention because yesterday they had 368 deaths. And today they had, and today they had 349. So between today and yesterday, they had almost as many deaths as in the entire SARS outbreak in the entire world. And this is one country, 2 days, 717 deaths. And so when you take a look at the curve, I mean, Italy just got going on the anniversary of physician checking into the Metropole Hotel, which was back in February 21st. So February 21st, Italy didn't have a whole lot of cases. They were pretty in the pack. Europe in general didn't have any. I mean, there's an organization, ECDC, they go and they make they're supposed to project threats and give warnings, and I remember when things were cooking in Wuhan, they thought the likelihood of any cases coming to Europe was very low. Sounds familiar. So they didn't they didn't think anything was coming to Europe. They thought, well, something might get out into, you know, Japan and South Korea.
That's another Asian problem. It's going to stay
right,
over.
Right. It's going to, you know, ease over the borders, may go down to Singapore, get down to Vietnam. You know, it's basically Taiwan. Might get over to Taiwan, but, you know, it's kind of be like SARS. It's pretty much in mainland China. There wasn't much that got out. There was the Metropole Hotel that kind of spread it. But even with the Metropole Hotel, the only country outside of Asia was Canada. And that wasn't even a country. It was just Toronto. And Toronto is where all the activity was. And so that's what they, you know, they were looking for this to be a rerun, that it would be something, you know, pretty much concentrated in China, a little bit spilling over the borders, and Europe just to kind of read about it, you know, nothing to worry about. So it wasn't that long ago. It was only about three, 4 weeks ago, less than a month ago, that things did start to take off, in Italy and Iran. I mean, those were the two countries that were in the news. And, it was a big deal because Iran had 50 dead, and they said they didn't really have 50 dead, and there were only like 15 dead. That's 15, that's another popular number cited by heads of state saying things are under control. Uh-huh. And they only had 15 back then 3 weeks ago, and now they're taking off. And so I thought I would start monitoring the individual states and just see, whether they were, whether it was kind of a localized thing where a couple states decided to kind of step up the, surveillance and had their numbers starting to go up. And the one that stood out the most was actually New York, and talking about doing 1,000 tests a day and then talking about doing 10,000 tests a day. And, today actually New York, did 211 new cases. So New York is definitely taking off. They've actually taken over first place in the United States. Now they're up to 950 confirmed cases. They passed Washington, which is up to 904. But those two numbers are big numbers. If you recall, not that long ago, the number two country behind China was the Diamond Princess. It wasn't even a country. It was just a ship. They had 600-700 cases, and they were number two. No other country had 600 cases, you know, maybe 6 weeks ago. And now the U.S. has one state, you know, New York, or another state, Washington. They both got 1.5 times what the Diamond Princess had. So things look a lot different today than they did just a few weeks ago. And I thought I would take a look and get an idea of whether, you know, this is one or two states that are basically jacking things up because they boosted their surveillance, or whether this was kind of taking off across the United States. And, I've been sending these to you, and you can take a look at the numbers. And it's not just these two states that are doing a lot of testing. The testing got them in the number one and number two position. Both of them are, you know, will be over 1,000 each tomorrow, because they're each adding 150 to 250 now. And both of those are, they're only limited by how many samples they can process in a day. It's not like they're by any means picking up all of the new samples in the area. They're just getting their thousand samples to test, and their numbers are going up because the flu season is starting to fade, and therefore a higher percentage of these samples that they collect that are from symptomatic patients actually do end up being COVID positive. So those numbers have been going up pretty dramatically, and there's a whole range. And I kind of mentioned getting tested, and most of your listeners and you probably have heard these horror stories of people that are have all the symptoms and try to get tested and fail to get tested. And I've been trying to do that here in Western Pennsylvania for, I guess, a week now. And
you mean
so
you
far,
still
no
haven't
success.
Been tested, Henry? No luck?
No. Well, not only haven't I still been testing, but the only way I got to be tested is to leave the area. I mean, I'm not going to even be able to be positive much higher, longer. I mean, right now it's getting to be a little bit of a long shot because I was coughing really a couple of weeks ago and just a little bit last week. And anyway, I got a lot of insight into exactly what is going on in Western Pennsylvania. And I thought it would be instructive to kind of, because I kind of went through the testing and what was going on and swine flu also. So there's some significant differences between what's going on with this outbreak and what went on with that outbreak. So with this outbreak, like I say, I still haven't been tested. And, part of it is basically who gets tested. And because there are a limited number of tests available, there is a lot of scrutiny put into exactly who's going to be at the front of the line because they really can't process that many. And so I tried this last week, and they were saying that the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center was setting up an assay in-house. And they got that going, he may be able to get me in to get tested. And I had mentioned last week that one of the problems is just the collection, that, they really, the local doctors really would rather not be collecting samples because, you're pretty much pretty well decked out when you're going trying to get
with the
nasal pharyngeal swab. And so they're not really prepared for that. And so it's more or less setting up a site where the collectors are prepared, all decked out so they can get samples. And so without that, it's very hard. It's not that you can go into your doctor's office. It's not that you can even go into the emergency department. They want you to call ahead. They want you to, have reason to be tested. And, in any event, he said that they were getting that set up. And then over the weekend, they announced it. And they did have one site set up in Pittsburgh to actually do the collection. So I went ahead and called the doctor back and said, well, it sounds like they got the site set up. Can you just write me a script and I'll go get a sample and give him a sample and see if I'm positive. And so he ended up calling me and said, well, it's not going to be quite that easy. And I said, well, I thought they got this site set up to really make it easy. He said, well, they got the site set up, but yeah, it's taken a while to get it rolling. They can only do about 20 tests a day. And as such,
Excuse me. 20 tests a day, and there are probably 100, 200 people won't test at least.
It.
Yeah, go
hold
ahead.
It. This is the biggest employer in Pittsburgh. This is the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center.
Wow.
And we're talking 20 tests a day on their in-house. Now, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. But right now, they can only do 20 tests a day. And so, I said, so I need to have a temperature and, breathing difficulties or something along those lines. And he said, well, you need a little more than that. you need to have a connection with a positive case or you have to be somebody that came from some country like China or something. So if you
this
were from China, you could get tested.
This
yeah, but
unbelievable.
If you're not a contact of somebody that's already been tested, And, you know, when I called last week, it was kind of like, well, we know you're not a contact because there's zero cases in Allegheny County. So you couldn't be a contact with anybody. And even if you were a contact with somebody that came from China and they were coughing a lot, that really didn't mean anything because obviously they weren't confirmed because there are zero cases in Allegheny County. In fact, there are zero cases in Western Pennsylvania.
This is unbelievable. In fact,
last week there were zero cases in Eastern Ohio. So there's still no cases in West Virginia. They're the only state in the country that's got zero. So, you know, there's nothing going on around here. So how could you possibly be positive? And,
be happy. Just be happy. I got a question. Who's responsible for this imbecility?
Hold on, it's worse.
Oh no!
So I said, well, you know, these guys can only do 20, but you know, the hard part is just collecting the sample. If they're collecting the samples there, can't they go ahead and collect samples and do 20 in house, and then take the other ones and just send them off to Quest or LabCorp? They both announced that you know, national labs, they're going, you know, if you listen to them on TV, it's a walk in the park. You just go and collect the sample, you go and you put it in that little box, you set it outside, they come in and they pick the box up, they go and they take it to their lab, they get the results, they send the results electronically. These guys are doing it all the time. They're got offices all over the place. And, you know, you see it when you go to the doctor's office. They always have those little boxes sitting out on the doorstep, and they're bringing one in or taking one out. And I said, can't they just go ahead and send it off to Quest? I don't care if it takes a couple of days extra. I mean, I'm not really that sick. I just want to know if I'm positive or not. And whether it takes, you know, 24 hours or 3 days. You know, I don't really care. If I wait much longer, I'm not going to be positive no matter who does the test. And he says, well, you know, they were all set to get going here. They had everything lined up. And then kind of at the last minute, they decided that they were just going to pick up and leave and head out west, because that's where all the action is. So they want to go out and check things out in California or Washington, or maybe Oregon. I don't know.
I find
they had everything signed. It was all set. They were going to get going. And then at the last minute, they up and left. And so can't do Quest, can't do LabCorp. UPMC is only doing 20. You got to be from China if you want to get anything done there. And I'll let you know if it changes. And that was the end of the conversation. There really wasn't much else to say. I said, well, you know, I might try just heading for Eastern PA or New York State. New York State's doing a lot. I don't know if you got to be a New York resident to get done. I think in New Rochelle you definitely do. But, you know, they're ready to rock and roll up there. You know, they got 211 positives today. and so it was kind of, well, I'll let you know if anything changes, but I don't really think anything's going to change. So the bottom line is that this is probably not a unique story. This is reality, not what you watch on TV where they tell you how easy it is. And 2 weeks ago, anybody in the United States should have got a test done, quote unquote. And it's virtually impossible to get a test done unless you're in the right location. And then when you're in the right location, it's still difficult because they're swamped. You know, there's a long line to get tested. You know, they got 211 positives in New York, but it's not that anybody can just walk in and get a result in New York. They're backlogged because they can only do 1,000 extractions a day. And, they're limiting who they're extracting. And so even a state like New York, is they can come up with 211 positives in one day is just scratching the surface. So the idea that the U.S. is on a path to be like Italy is false. They're on a path to easily surpass Italy in the not too distant future. And so that's the reason things, you know, it's kind of like, well, we're not going to do any more.
Can I add
any more sports games? We're not.
Right. Can I add through gross negligence? Gross negligence?
No,
I was told 2 weeks ago, Henry, by my government, 2 weeks ago told me that 6 million kits were going to be shipped all over the country, and each kit is worth 700 tests. 2 weeks ago on Monday, they told me that. My government did. I heard it.
Right. And then they said, but you can't extract the RNA because there's a shortage on RNA extraction kits. So you can get the kit, but you can't really run a test because you can't get the RNA out of the virus because those are backlogged, backordered. So it's a joke. It's not even a joke anymore. It was a joke. Now it's just a very sad story, and it's the reality that there are a lot of cases in the United States. You know, when I said this several weeks ago that the U.S. is overrun with virus, it wasn't, you know, a wild guess, and it wasn't a hunch, and it wasn't, I mean, it was obvious back then, and these, you know, these, oh, we're screening who's coming from Wuhan when Wuhan has got a total shutdown and you can't even leave your house there, but they're checking to make sure nobody from Wuhan is coming to the U.S. And just to show how misguided that was, speaking of 211 positives in New York, sequence of the index case for New York, the first case from New Rochelle, was released today. And, that sequence is, the ORF8 lineage that I've talked about.
Yes.
For quite some time now. And, that was kind of interesting because the ORF8 lineage is quite widespread. And that was the first one that came to the U.S.
Uh-huh.
Up in Oregon. And that's all they're getting up there, you know, up in Kirkland or Kirkwood, whichever
one it is. That's
Washington. Yeah, up in Washington, it's just one ray after the other. They're all the same lineage, and they've got a couple extra mutations, and they all got those couple extra mutations. So it's the same sequence. And that's the same sequence that got on the Grand Princess. It spread all over the place. So that's a very widespread sequence. But what is interesting is that that sequence, the original, the early one, the first one that came into the U.S., that had the two that defined the lineage plus one that was relatively rare. And although it was relatively rare, it could be found, and it could be found in China. So that was definitely, you know, a version that had come from China, and actually the person that brought it came from Wuhan. So, I mean, he was positive. He was from Wuhan. And there were other examples of that in China. And there were quite a few that came right at about the same time. That one was, in the Seattle area. And then the next one was from Chicago. And then there was one from, Los Angeles, and then there's one from Phoenix, and these kind of came bang, bang, bang. Those were essentially the first sequences that came to the U.S. other than one other from the L.A. area, which is from Orange County. That was the only one that wasn't this ORF8 lineage. And they all had a few extra markers that distinguished them from each other, but they all had these same two markers that defined that lineage. And not surprisingly, they were, other than Chicago, they were all on the West Coast, and they came, and they were early. And so they had additional markers that said they came from China. And So this one, this on the East Coast in New Rochelle in New York, has the two markers that says it's the ORF8 lineage. So it's got the ORF8 mutation, it's got the one upstream. But it didn't have any of the Chinese one that were on the West Coast that you know, it showed up there. And the markers that it had are on the ORF8 lineage that's circulating in Europe. So New Rochelle is the European version of the ORF8 lineage.
And so
while Trump was making sure nobody was coming from Wuhan, mm-hmm. kind of looking to the West, he doesn't pay any attention to what's happening in the East, and that was Europe, and Europe was ceding the U.S., and they were essentially ceding the East Coast to the U.S., and that's where there's quite a bit of activity now. These numbers that I was putting up there, New York's got quite a few cases, and Massachusetts, part of that was from that Biogen party, but meeting. But
yes.
Massachusetts has quite a few cases. New Jersey has got quite a few cases. And all of these not only have quite a few cases, but they're like doubling every other day.
Yeah.
They're posting the results, but sometimes they're posting them several times a day. But they're doing at least once a day, and each day you take a look at the numbers. I just started doing this a couple of days ago, and they just keep going up and up and up, and they're all kind of doing that. So some are starting at 20, and they're going to 40. Other ones are starting at 80, and they're going to 150, and uh-huh. And it's all up and down the coast, and that's what's happening with the totals, and it's pretty remarkable as how quickly these numbers are shooting up. I mean, even Washington, which has a lot, you don't really have to go back that far. If you go back to Wednesday, they had 366 cases. And the next day, they were at 457, and then 568, and then 642. And then 769, and today they were up to 904. And they're doing the same thing with the deaths. They were 29 deaths, and 31, then 37, then 40, and 42, and they added 6 today. And so they're up to 48. So each one of these numbers I just read, that's one day after the other. That's not weekly numbers. Those are daily numbers. And that's
right.
How quickly the even the deaths have almost doubled in like a week. And so what's happening is it's kind of getting to the critical mass. It's increasing exponentially.
The tipping point is in sight.
Right, right. And so it is looking a lot like Italy, except it's looking like Italy when we're not really testing.
The Italians were testing. The point is clear. You're right,
right,
Henry. Totally right.
Right, right, right. And so there's a ton of virus that isn't even showing up on the test because the testing is minimal. I mean, in Allegheny County, where it's almost impossible to get tested, that when UPMC is, instead of doing 20 tests a day, they're doing 1,000 tests a day. And they've got several different, locations that aren't just in Allegheny County. I mean, Allegheny County is a big county, but there's like three or four other counties in the Pittsburgh metropolitan area that have reasonable, good-sized populations, and there's no reason why the positives are just in Pittsburgh, especially when the metropolitan area goes into these other adjacent counties. So the numbers of Western Pennsylvania are probably going to be a little less than Eastern Pennsylvania, but not that much less. And I'm sure it's the same thing in in eastern Pennsylvania. There's a lot more there than there is in the west, but they're not really geared up and going either. So when they do get the national lab set up so they can go ahead and get Quest or LabCorp to do this at in numbers, and when they get the state labs that are doing their own tests with whatever research university or whatever nearby to help them out, because they got PCR machines, and it's just a matter of using one of the tests that's approved, that you can look at the numbers, and the number one country in the world will not be China, and it won't be Italy. I mean, it's right here.
If we can believe the Chinese statistics. If we can believe the Chinese statistics.
I'm saying what the numbers are. What the numbers are that are published.
Yeah.
The published numbers, U.S. will be number one. And Italy's got some major issues. And they come with all different kind of excuses. And I think they're largely excuses. I mean, they said they're an older population. The U.S.'s population is older. They say they got underlying conditions. The U.S. population has a lot of underlying conditions. And they're saying, well, the grandparents live with their family, so they're bigger families inside of the dwelling, and, so they can get infected. There may be a little bit more of that than the U.S., but these differences are mostly just due to the fact that they had a head start. And they got started a couple of weeks ahead of the U.S. And they're kind of at this exponential growth range where when you double, 300 is a lot more noticeable than when you're doubling 30. And the difference is only 4 or 5 days between those two types of numbers, or maybe a week. And so the concern as far as taking all of these efforts to reduce the interactions and the transmission of the virus, and to basically try to keep curve from getting up too high is almost certain to fail. And the various hospitals are already trying to eliminate surgeries that aren't really necessary.
Elective surgeries are being postponed. People are being told to go home, wait, this can't do it now. Yeah. They know their beds could all be gone in a matter of a couple of weeks from this thing.
Right.
They know it.
Yeah, and the point is that there's a lot in reserve. The number of cases, they really don't have that much of an idea. I mean, even when they go to a state like New York, where they're jacking up the
totally right.
level of testing, the rate-limiting step is still doing the test itself. It's not finding somebody. There's plenty of people that, all you have to do is say, drive in, it's open, just drive in and we'll take a sample. And that's, as the flu season fades away, that's going to be a relatively effective approach, because people that have flu symptoms in the next few weeks or so are going to be, largely a COVID case, because the other seasonal flu and other respiratory diseases kind of start to fade. They don't disappear, but they go down. And if COVID maintains, and right now there's not much evidence that it's going down, whether these efforts to control, the crowds are going to, they'd probably be successful if everybody would participate, but getting everybody to participate is a bit of a challenge.
So just to wrap it up, our testing to this point in time is still almost a tragedy. 250,000 plus tested in South Korea, and we have a little over 20,000 total here. And the majority of that testing figures is from private public health labs around the country.
Yeah, and you can see the numbers. I mean, the U.S. is moving up on the list. I mean, it's the numbers right now, as of today, just on the number of positives, the U.S. is up to 4,500. France is at 66, and Germany's at 72. And after that, you're on the countries that people keep saying over and over again. After that comes South Korea, and that, well, Spain's moved up. So Spain's in there now. Spain's moved past South Korea now. And Spain's another example. You know, I've been using Spain as an example because back on that same anniversary when Italy and Iran were starting to take off, Spain had zero on the main.
That's right. I remember.
Course, and all they had were one in Mallorca and one in
Canary
right
Islands,
off the coast.
Tenerife.
Yeah, Canary Islands, right. And so they just had those two. And now they're at 9,942. So they're just about at 10,000 with 342 deaths. And so they're pretty much locking things down right now. And France is getting ready to lock things down. And
check this one out. We're right
behind them.
Check this out. The coronavirus has killed 41 Americans. This is 3 days ago. I don't know what the number is now.
Hold it. What do you think? What do you think the number is now? 41 a few days ago.
Got to be over 100. Got to be over
87. 87 is what they got us to hear. Yeah.
Panel of experts at the University of California, San Francisco predicted that between 40% and 70% of Americans could become infected within the next 18 months. Right? That was reported by someone who was at the panel. Now, assuming the case fatality rate is 1%, which we all know is absurd, we both feel it's going to end up being double digits. Assuming a 1% mortality rate from the coronavirus and 50% of the population becomes infected, that means 1.5 million Americans could die at a 1% mortality rate. So play the numbers. Let's say we're right, and it's 10%. It may be higher than
It's probably not going to. See, there's two different things. It's 10% for the pneumonia cases, but they're not talking about the pneumonia. So when they're talking about 50% of the population, they're just talking about the virus. And so that is going to be in the single digits, but it's probably not going to be 1%. It's probably going to be 2 or 3%. So,
which would
that's
be
the kind of number.
Logical.
Yeah, and so, but that's several million. That's what it would come down to. Maybe 4 or 5 million potentially. But
that's a lot of dead people.
It would be in the millions, and that's the concern. I mean, the concern is that the fatality rate in the fall could be higher than the fatality rate in the spring. I mean, that's what the big difference is.
You've been saying that from the beginning. I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think when this comes back in the fall, it's going to be more virulent. It will have changed and mutated further. Yes.
Right. And here's what the difference is between the swine flu and the current situation with the SARS virus. With swine flu, number one, it was flu. And number two, it kind of followed this pattern. It really started in the spring, And what happened was, initially it was competing with seasonal flu. And there was H1N1 seasonal flu, and there was H3N2, both of which were circulating, and there was even influenza B. And then, as the, it got later and later in the flu season, the other versions of the flu, the seasonal flus, just started to fade. And swine flu became dominant, and by April or so, it was really the only flu. It was the only flu that was circulating. So if you had the flu, you had swine flu, and this was in the spring of 2009. And then it kind of faded over the summer, and it wasn't quite that much of a concern. And the reason it wasn't a concern is it was flu, and in the spring, it really wasn't that virulent. you had people, and it was spreading, and, you know, kids went on Easter break, and they came back, and all of a sudden it was all over the United States. But it wasn't that people were dying in the spring. There were outbreaks, and you could detect it with the flu assay, and it kind of got backed up at the CDC, and so it got to the point where that was the only one that was circulating, so you could really tell where it was by just looking to see if it was influenza A positive, because all of the influenza A by then was swine flu. And so you could monitor it, and then it did start to fall over the summer. And meanwhile, you know, there was an effort to make a vaccine. And to make a vaccine for flu wasn't that big a deal, because you know, the flu vaccine changes all the time. There's you know, there's right. H1N1, there's H3N2, and there's influenza B. And the way they're done is you just take the H and the N from whatever target you want, and you put it on this backbone from this a flu that was isolated like in 1938 in Puerto Rico, you know, right. PRH. And so you kind of know how that behaves, and you just switch the H and the N there, and you grow it in eggs back then. And you just had to pick a version that gave a fairly high titer, so it grew to a fairly high level. And then it was a little bit of safety. You didn't have to do that much safety because you really weren't doing anything that different than what you do every year when you make a flu vaccine. You just had to isolate the H in the end and throw it in with the other 16 segments, and you basically had the virus. You killed it, and that was your vaccine. And so when it came back in the fall, it kind of went through a couple of waves. It definitely did it here in Pittsburgh. The first one, when it came back, was kind of mild, and people got coughs, but they didn't get that sick. And then right around October, it kind of moved up a notch, and people got sick, and most people survived. There was some younger adults that seemed to be susceptible to it, and so there were deaths from that. But then the vaccine was kind of ready by December, so it was a little bit late because it was already waning. But the vaccine essentially worked, and by December, everybody was vaccinated, and there really wasn't all that much. There was some activity in January and February, but it was kind of under control. The number of people that got into trouble was somewhat limited. And that was kind of how it went. And then the next year, it came back, and that was in the vaccine, so everybody got vaccinated then that wanted it. The first round, it was kind of rushed, and they mostly did children first because they were the ones that would spread it a lot.
So we have just one minute, so wrap it up, please.
Okay, And so for COVID, it's totally different. It's a coronavirus vaccine. It's going to take a year to 18 months. There's really not going to be a vaccine. And it's more lethal. And so you're going to have the virus, and it could very well follow the same path, and it can kind of do in the healthcare system in the spring, mm-hmm. and then all hell's going to break loose in the fall.
Didn't say all health. But, he said all hell. I heard him.
That's
a little
right.
joke there.
Right.
All health yeah. is not yeah. about to break loose here. Trump urges no gatherings of 10 people or more in the country. This is unprecedented. No more than 10 people in a group. And he said the coronavirus could carry on into July or August. Well, the Democrat convention was scheduled for July, and the GOP convention was scheduled for August. Ain't gonna happen. These people who run around, Henry, continuing to point to, well, look, there's only 35 dead in South Carolina, or what are cases, or whatever it is, and there are a few hundred cases here yeah. or there, and they keep right. pointing out to the same thing. 35,000 a year die on the average with flu. They're missing the point. The flu right. doesn't engender this kind of national shutdown and lockdown. It has done already probably trillions of dollars in damage to this country. Probably already yep. that much. Considering all the businesses that are going to go under and never come back, ever. All the people who are out of work now, who have no income to pay their mortgage, their rents, their food, their medical bills. What this country is headed toward, a catastrophe. And these people who play with the low numbers and say, ah, nothing to worry about, they are really misleading anyone who listens to them.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, this is the nature of a pandemic. Initially, it starts out low, and usually it comes in two waves. The first wave is just kind of gives you a little preview. It's called a herald wave, and it's kind of heralding what's going to come in the fall. And, you know, it's possible it won't behave that way, but 1918 did, and so did the swine flu.
Right.
And there's you know, that's just the way it works. I mean, the virus evolves, and it goes in, it comes the first time. A fair number of people get infected. They get some immunity, and then the virus, you know, a version that isn't really that susceptible to the immunity ends up taking over because all their competition gets knocked out by the immunity, and all that you're left with was a virus, a sequence that really isn't affected very much by that immunity. And right. with the coronavirus, sometimes it actually enhances the ability
right.
to,
right.
you know,
yeah. Okay, we got to say
goodbye. I will say, but that's
yeah.
where we are.
Yeah,
there's
you.
A lot more virus than people realize. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Thanks, Henry. Talk to you tomorrow night. Thank you.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Okay, remember what Goldman Sachs told his 1,500 clients in the emergency Sunday conference call yesterday? They said half of America will get sick. That's what Goldman Sachs said. Make of it what you will.